Mike Daisy's theater monologue, The Agony and the Ecstasy of Steve Jobs, caused a bit of a stir last year when an edited version of it was broadcast on This American Life. That's because when fact-checkers found that it contained several factual errors, Ira Glass broadcast a retraction of the original piece. That hasn't stopped Mr. Daisy from creating new monologues. He returned to Joe's Pub at the Public Theater last fall to do a series on various topics, a new one each month. And the next one, which debuts this coming Monday, is billed as a sequel of sorts to the Steve Jobs piece with the tongue-twisting title, Faster, Better, Social, Click, Like, Touch, Tweet, Yes, Yes, One, or Our Slavery is Rich and Full. Did I get that right, Mike?
Yes, yes, I think you did.
And I'm pleased that it brings Mr. Daisy back to his show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, how quickly can you say that title?
Oh, I can't at all. I've been doing the very internet thing. I just call it Faster, Better, Social. And then just let the rest go.
Well, a lot has happened since you were here last. Before we get into the whole Steve Jobs to-do, can you tell us what you've been doing since about the series?
Oh, I've been working. I mean, I've been working a lot. I've been doing a brand new monologue every month, as you were saying, at the Public. And then sort of pouring myself into that.
What begins first, the title or the monologue?
The title. Since the monologues are never scripted, it really grows out of the title and then the core seeds of what it will be about.
So you haven't really written it. You've just kind of outlined it for yourself?
There isn't even an outline. But like, there's a lot of research that happens in the lead up to any one of the stories.
But I know that when I'm talking off the cuff, sometimes I misspeak.
Yes. I mean, I do as well. Yes, it does occur.
Is this going to be about what it sounds like, our increasing dependence on smartphones and social networking sites?
Yes, it'll be about that dependence and about how it's transforming the way we see the world. But it's also, I think, going to be about how the fundamentals of what it is to be a human being have not changed at all. And so I think there's some ways in which this revolution feels like it's all new, but in some very deep ways, it actually has all happened before.
In the Steve Jobs piece, you talked about how much you love technology and described yourself as an Apple fanboy, a worshiper in the cult of Mac. Has your attitude toward technology and Apple changed since you wrote that?
Yes, it has actually. Yes, that's a great example of something that was completely true when it was spoken. And yet the monologue goes on and is performed over and over in other places. But it's not true for me as much anymore. I don't love technology the same way.
And you perform that monologue a lot. What about these other ones, one or two or three nights at most?
Yes, most of them. You know, the problem is for a long time I was embracing sort of a theatrical metaphor for the work. So I wanted to do one story and tell it hundreds of times and see it sharpen the way that the theater sharpens things. And now I want – there are too many stories that need telling that I want to tell. And so I'm trying to vary the way in which the stories are told.
Now, is this the last one or is the one in March the last one? How long is this series going to go?
Well, we're actually going all the way to April right now. We've added till April. And
you know your topics?
So I have a rough cloud of topics, and then right before each one, I declare what the next one will be, which gives me this great flexibility. It's why we're able to do one about the hurricane in the fall.
Now, I'm glad that you mentioned the cloud, because that brings us back to the earlier problem. You want to give us a rundown on what's happened since you did the Steve Jobs piece?
Well, you mean fundamentally where we sit today?
Well, you know, there's that whole the debate over whether you're allowed artistic license or whether you have to live up to journalistic standards when you're doing this sort of piece.
Yes, there is that debate.
And do you think of yourself as a journalist?
Yeah, I do, actually. I mean, I think that for a long time, especially when the heat of the firestorm of the controversy – there was a lot of positioning. But the truth is, I think that lots of people have the job of being a journalist in different contexts. I think I'm an unusual kind of journalist, but it's really clear that a lot of the tropes I use in the work reflect some of the same tropes that journalism uses.
Well, can you talk about your process, how that piece or any piece evolves and why sometimes details may not be 100% accurate?
Well, I think that that is part and parcel of something that I've really spent the last year being deeply obsessed with, which is the line between fiction and nonfiction. And what I've come at from my work is that I certainly will never claim the mantle of nonfiction for my work again. But it's actually deeper than that for me. I don't believe in nonfiction, period. I believe that all stories are fiction. Like, the going through the experience of this and seeing how clearly everyone shapes stories has made it more clear than ever to me.
Memoirists say pretty much the same thing,
that
in the process of writing a memoir, you're automatically thinking in terms of style, of craft, of and so certain things get adjusted in the shaping of them.
Yes,
but about doing the
same? And I would say
same...
that I would say my work largely falls in the world of memoir.
Now, what about doing the same story two or three times? I assume that since you're not working from notes, you haven't memorized anything, it's going to change as well.
It changes. It changes constantly. The way that any story changes as we all tell it, you know, again and again.
So what have you done with the Steve Jobs piece? Have you just abandoned it, or are you going to perform it with corrections?
Oh, I did the opposite of abandoning it. I continued to perform it through the entire scandal in a revised version that removed anything that was ever in contention. And then I open sourced a transcript of it so that other people could perform it. And it's being done all over the world.
Now, there are people who, when we announced that you were coming on the show, we have listeners who immediately expressed outrage. There are people who have come to your defense. But a listener who admits to being, he says, I'm a little obsessed over this Daisy thing, says, how does Daisy explain the way he exposed his Chinese translator to jeopardy by leaving her in China while using her real name in his personally lucrative, albeit bogus, theatrical performance, which he purported to describe the acts of fraud he committed with her assistance against a powerful institution of the Chinese economy?
Well, I mean, it's actually kind of in two directions, that question. Like, you know, you can be outraged because there was never any threat at all and nothing was ever dangerous. Or you can be outraged because, like, the Chinese government is hunting people and you know, presumably throwing them in prison. You know, I actually simply used the pseudonym that she used in colloquial speech with no last name. So I didn't actually use her real name.
Well, this person is also worried that somehow you're paying me off to have you come on this show, and that
I did send some money ahead of time. Not much because I work in the theater.
The next thing you know, we're going to have somebody who engaged in mortgage fraud come on because he's suggesting that I am personally corrupt.
Well, I mean, in a sense, aren't we all personally corrupt? I mean, the thing that's interesting is that the most interesting thing about journalism to me, I'm actually auditing a class in journalism at NYU right now. What I'm most fascinated by is that when we engage in the myth of objective journalism, we actually don't give journalism all the credit it deserves. Journalism is the attempt to tell a true story with tools that are riddled with lies and subjectivity.
Well, I think most journalists will admit that no matter how much they try to be objective, they can't be 100% objective. And if we watch cable news, we realize that there's an awful lot of journalism that has very little that's objective in it. If we read the New York Times, we sometimes see stories that we can perceive a slant in. What about some of the other things that you've written? Because you do pick things that are going to cause controversy. One of the new pieces, America Utopias, looks at Disney World, the Burning Man Festival, Occupy Wall Street in Zuccotti Park. Did you visit all those places?
I did. I did visit all those places and participate in all those sort of civic events. Went to Disney World with my extended family, for whom Disney is a religion, and I went to Burning Man for a week.
Other people find that a religion.
They do indeed. And with Zuccotti Park, actually a large part of the show is about the fact that, you know, I missed the heart of Zuccotti Park, like so many other people did.
And then you did a piece on Hurricane Sandy?
I did, yes.
Were you affected by the storm?
I was not affected very much. I mean, I drove out of the city in an attempt to make a performances in Chicago. And so I detail that part of my journey, which was very, very easy. But I use it as a lens to talk about what I was seeing in real time, thanks to the way we live with our devices happening back home. A lot of it, though, was about the recovery and the cleanup efforts.
Last month's monologue, which has a title that we can't say on the air, was about Ayn Rand. Why devote a whole evening to her?
Ayn Rand is the most important person that we don't talk about in American literature and thought, like without a doubt in my mind. And it's even more clear after doing the show. The left, it's one of the few books, her books are one of the few books that are banned effectively from conversation. In this city we live in, if you go to a cocktail party, you cannot mention that you have just finished reading Atlas Shrugged. You can't do that. And
well,
it's interesting.
You can say it, but you can't say you liked it.
No, you certainly can't say you liked it. You certainly can't. You can only
read
it
with it.
You can only read it ironically. And it's too long, honestly, to be read ironically. And so I find it fascinating, the power structures at play and how we can't actually grapple with that.
And even Paul Ryan has backtracked on his affection for Ayn Rand. But in his case, it's because she was an avowed atheist.
Yes.
A number of listeners have said their big problem with the Steve Jobs pieces, that you made up facts and presented them as facts.
Yeah, that is the problem.
And you'll never do that again.
I'm sorry, is that my statement? Or is that
no,
like we're looking for a pledge?
Well, I mean, do you wind up in a situation where you say, you know, if I just fudge this a little bit, it makes the whole story so much more dramatic?
Well, I think that phenomenon exists in all storytelling everywhere. And I think what I'm going to be much more aware of is the responsibility and the way that responsibility varies depending on the kind of story you're telling. Like, are you telling a story about a local issue, a national issue? Are you telling a story that's politically charged? Are you telling a story that could transition very easily from the stage to the newspaper?
Did your relationship with the public theater change at all after this thing happened?
I think one of the things that was really heartening is how emphatically the public stood behind my work. It's been fantastic. And the only way that the relationship's changed, honestly, is that it's really deepened. Getting the chance to do new work all the time in this way is like the best thing I could have done as an artist, regardless of whether there'd been a scandal or not.
So you're going to be at Joe's Pub next Monday. With this latest piece, Faster, Better, Social, Click, Like, Touch, Tweet, Yes, Yes, One, or Our Slavery is Rich and Full. If people want information about tickets, they can go to our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Mike Daisy for being on our show again.
Thanks for having me.